In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
For anyone willing to have an open mind about election fraud, there were some pretty blatant examples of it in the 2020 election. All it really takes is a willingness to have an open mind and let the evidence convince you. But, just like COVID, merely having questions about election fraud met with shrieks from the very people who benefited from it, like the mainstream media, which is far left and their person won, so no one is allowed to ask questions. In fact, you were framed as believing the big lie, that the very notion that the election could be stolen was so outrageous it was a Nazi-style propaganda tactic to make a lie so big that people would believe it. And that's the kind of thing you say to intimidate people so they won't ask questions for fear of being ridiculed. We are on the cusp right now of getting to the truth of what happened in 2020. The FBI just raided Fulton County and seized evidence from that election. Fulton County election officials have freaked out and already filed a lawsuit asking a judge to force the FBI to give back the evidence and prevent them from even looking. Two things on that. One, there's always fraud when someone doesn't want you to look. Second, if there was no election fraud, then the correct response would have been, good, we're glad you took them. Take a look. There's nothing to hide, and maybe we can finally put this myth about 2020 election being stolen to rest. When the true extent of the fraud is revealed, there is going to be an awful lot of cognitive dissonance. That's when a person's brain gets confronted with new information that directly contradicts previously held beliefs, and the person's brain sort of short circuits. It's a self-defense mechanism. Because our minds don't like to be wrong, the human psyche will come up with very inventive reasons and explanations why the new information is not really the truth, that the old belief is really the truth. The reason the short circuit happens is because the mind senses that the new information really is the truth. If it wasn't, then the new information wouldn't be easily discarded. That means they're confronted with the reality about what they used to believe, that the old beliefs were the lie. The short circuit self-defense happens because they not only have to admit that they had been deceived, that someone fooled them, but now they're confronted with all of the actions that had been based on that previous wrong information. And with people like the truly Trump deranged, that might mean horrible things they said or did to people, including friends or family, who were actually telling the truth the whole time. Dr. Douglas Frank is a world-renowned physicist, inventor, and Nobel Prize nominee with more than 60 peer-reviewed scientific publications and feature articles in prestigious national journals. He's widely recognized as a mathematics genius, and that makes him aptly suited to be investigating election fraud. So, Dr. Frank, it is good to talk to you again.
Good to be back. Nice to hear you guys' voice.
Yeah, so we're talking to you. It's a rather snowy day out there in Ohio. It seems to be kind of par for the course for the last couple of guests here. You are coming to Oregon that we will get into a little bit later, but I'd like to start with something because I know that you are certainly tied into election fraud and some of the remedies for that, one of which is hand counting. And it just so happens that last week news had broken that the Democrats in Virginia, who just got elected, you know, they just won the recent election, have now introduced bills that would mandate the use of ballot counting machines and actively bans hand counting, which is one of the things that I know that you certainly promote. I mean, that's just a wee bit suspicious that when you win, the very first thing you do is ban a process that would lead to election integrity, don't you think?
Yeah, that's a little, I would think that's awfully suspicious. I always tell people it's less important how you count the ballots as it is important which ballots are you counting. So, you know, I always tell people it doesn't matter how many times you count the cash in the register. What matters is, are all the bills real or which one of them are counterfeit? And so in Oregon, your main problem is that since you mail ballots to everybody, 30% of those ballots are going somewhere other than a real voter. So if any of those ballots come back, it doesn't really matter whether you count them by hand or count them by the machine. That's the problem.
Yeah, well, there was a recent Supreme Court case, Bose versus Illinois Board of Elections, that is at least give me some hope that we might be seeing some action out of the Supreme Court in terms of getting rid of some of these laws. that would open the door for election integrity. And the one of the cases coming up, which I think has a lot of relevance here to Oregon, is that they're going to be hearing a case about counting mail-in ballots after Election Day. Some states, they allow up to 11 days or more for these ballots to straggle in. And I know that you're not an attorney, but if you were whispering in the justices' ears, what would you want them to know about mail-in ballots?
Mail-in ballots are the easiest way to cheat an election, according to Hillary and Billy Carter.
Funny how they forgot that.
Yeah, and it's not just it's not just a Republican saying, it's everybody says that it's the easiest way to cheat an election. If I was whispering in their ears, I'd say you have to cut it off on Election Day, and the absentee balloting or voting by mail has to be limited to a select few, sufficiently small that the clerk can do their due diligence. You know, like if you've got military people, by all means, please let's help them vote. If you've got people that are confined to home and not able to come in, I can understand why you might do that. But you need to take precautions when you do mail-in balloting, because there's you lose chain of custody.
Right.
So if you're going to have a small number of them, then the clerk can do due diligence. But when the entire batch is coming in by mail, they can't do their due diligence, and there's really no way to verify that the ballots are really from whom you think they're from.
Right, or even who filled it out once. I mean, even if it got to the address, you can't guarantee that person actually filled that out.
Well said. Yeah. You've lost chain of custody. So that's the easiest way to cheat an election right there.
So we, of course, have mail-in ballots here in Oregon. We sort of invented this, first in the nation to do that.
I think it was 97.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So I don't think it was actually used for a presidential election until about 2006, if memory serves. But because I remember when I first moved out here in 96, 97, we still went down to cast your vote at the local precinct down at the city hall. So, but I think it fully kicked in at all levels in 2006 or so, if I remember. But anyway, short of a Supreme Court ruling and or legislation to specifically ban mail-in ballots, I just don't think that we're going to be able to shake Oregon of its addiction to mail-in ballots. However, as far as that upcoming case with ballots would have to arrive on Election Day, in some ways that sort of defeats the purpose of mail-in ballots. I mean, if they have to be there on Election Day, you may as well just go there and vote. But is there any way to make mail-in ballots more secure, at least on some levels?
Well, to make them more secure, sure, you can always make them more secure, but sufficiently secure is the question. You know, for example, in many states, they require you to make a photocopy of your driver's license and include it with the ballot you mail in. That makes it more secure, except you'll recall last year in June, Kash Patel gave a public statement showing that they had seized 1 million fake driver's licenses and 1 million fake ballots seized outside of Detroit. So, you know, that wouldn't fix it, would it? But it makes it harder to cheat. It doesn't eliminate the avenue for cheating, but it makes it much harder for certainly. So, yeah, there are ways to make it more secure. Like one of my favorites is in counties where, like, for example, in Alabama, where 98% of the voting takes place on Election Day in person. Think about that for a minute. The other 2% that are by mail, when the clerks send out the ballots, they initial them. Hmm. So if a ballot comes back in the mail that doesn't have their initial, then they are very concerned about it. Yeah. So, yes, there are ways, in other words, to make it more secure, sufficiently secure to rule out all fraud. I don't know if that'll ever happen, which is why I like it being a small percentage of the total ballots.
We got kind of a larger question here that might take you a bit to answer. So let's go ahead and take a break here. Come back. We'll continue this discussion with Dr. Douglas Frank talking about election integrity. Could it finally happen here in Oregon? What would it take to get there? And welcome back. This is the Ashby Radio Show, talking today to the Johnny Appleseed of election integrity. But his official title is Dr. Douglas Frank, who has been working since December of 2020 for election reform with grassroots teams in every state, hence the nickname. I have to admit, that's really pretty cool. I don't know who gave you that, but that's pretty awesome. So going
LA Times.
Oh, did they? Okay. Well, that's rather clever. So we were talking about mail-in ballots there going on that last segment. So as far as the ballots themselves, I like the idea of the clerk initialing them. But the problem is once they come back, my problem is not just mail-in ballots, but any ballots. Once they're thrown into the big giant pot there's no means really at that point to have a truly accurate forensic audit. If you can't go back to the voter and say, did you actually cast this vote? Was this your ballot? So are there things beyond just the mail-in ballots that we need to be securing?
Yeah, you bring up an interesting point, though. I testified in the case, the Tim Sipple case up in Washington County a few years ago, and I signed an NDA, and I was given access to all of the election management system software and all the information for all of Washington County. And lo and behold, what did we discover? We discovered that every single ballot, because we have the ballot images, is encoded with a QR code, which there's a key which connects it to the voter. So you don't have anonymous voting in Washington County. No. Or in fact, every one of your clear ballot counties, I think there are a dozen or something like that in your state, every one of those counties do not have anonymous voting. And when we brought that up in court, the clerk said, well, yeah, it's anonymous because we don't share the key with anybody. Well, then why is it on there? Well, we give it to the printer. So the company that prints and mails the ballots has the key, and I have the key because I have the signed NDA. In other words, anybody who has the key can now know how every person voted. So it's not anonymous. So in that case, you could go back if you found fraudulent ballots and remove them. And it's the same way in North Carolina. North Carolina doesn't. You don't have a constitutional right to an anonymous ballot in North Carolina. They have a serial number on each one. And if they discover after the fact that you weren't supposed to vote, they'll go back and take it out and change the totals. But that's a little bit of an aside, but you mentioned it in the question. So, you know, how to secure the elections. I always like making a simple analogy to people. You know, if your governor said, we're going to back the truck up to the building downtown and we want you all to bring in your guns and turn them in. We're tired of all this violence. Well, you know, what would people say? People would say, pound sand. We're not going to give you our guns, right? We don't do that. We don't have to comply with that unconstitutional order. In fact, it's our duty as citizens to be armed and proficient. And the Second Amendment says we're even supposed to be maintaining a well-regulated militia. So no, we will not comply. Now, why can we say that? We don't have to comply with any law or policy which violates our constitutional rights or disenfranchises us for our constitutional rights. So, understanding that principle, if we can show that the election system that the state is imposing on the counties is disenfranchising them from their constitutional rights, which we can, then the counties don't have to comply. But having one county at a time stand up against the state is a war. I know, because we've been doing this all around the country. So what I've been doing in the state of Oregon is organizing multiple counties to gather their evidence, which we're converging on completing. And then the counties are going to stand together and tell the state, we're not going to use your system anymore. Your rolls are filthy dirty. We've already proven that. The mailing ballots to everybody in the dirty rolls is opening us up to all this fraud. Here's the evidence of the fraud we found so far. We're going to run our own elections locally, and we're not going to use your dumb machines, and we're going to save a factor of 10 on our costs in the process. So that's kind of the strategy I've been promoting around the state of Oregon.
So what does that take in terms of the election division at the county level taking those over? I assume, obviously, the elections clerk would have to get involved in that. But, I mean, does there have to be anything from the county commissioners? And how does that work in practice?
In practice, the commissioners need to decide. And the driving force for them is we have a group in the community that's raising heck. Hey, how come you're letting fraud happen in our elections? Every one of these fraudulent ballots is disenfranchising one of us from our real ballot. So we don't want to use the system anymore. And then, by the way, county commissioners, guess what? Look, you can save a factor of 10 on every election. Why wouldn't we do that?
Yeah, it's really astounding that we're spending billions of dollars to run our own elections. It's just outrageous, really. So jumping ahead here a little bit, one of the things that you often hear is, well, there are these fraudulent votes being cast. And so here in Oregon, just using it as an example, because I think it's a lot harder to do in a state where you actually have to go visit the polls and actually cast and show ID
Good
and
point.
Everything else. But as far as Oregon is concerned, if they're sending out ballots to, you know, willy-nilly to all of these addresses, and you've got that no chain of custody, which we talked about earlier, you have no guarantee that that ballot goes to the right person and that that person actually fills it out and that that ballot comes back and isn't tampered with. How do fraudulent votes get into the system? Because, you know, if you've got, say, 1,000 addresses that are fraudulent, somebody has to go there to pick them up. So are they inserted at the elections office? Are they, somewhere along the mailing process? How does that work?
I think that's a great question. It's hard to give one answer because there's so many ways of doing it. I would say 99% of the time you have honest election officials and they're not going to cheat. And so having extra ballots inserted at the local election office is not what I would start with as the major source. I'm sure there are some exceptions, and actually we've had some court cases around the country where we've proven that that's the way the fraud, that there was some fraud done that way. But I think that's the exception. I think most of our election officials are honest, hardworking people. The main way that it gets is that somebody who, let's say you're a homeless person. In Oregon, it's a big issue because you've got about 30% of the people in your rolls don't belong there, and those ballots are just being mailed out. Now, if you're a homeless person and that ballot is worth $50, you can just go mail to mailbox to mailbox and collect them. That's a good day's work. You know, collect 20 or 30 of those ballots, turn them into a local NGO. Hmm. The local NGO fills them out. Zuckerberg pays them, and they you saw the movie 2,000 Mules, and they deliver them to the drop boxes. That's the major way that they're getting in. There are other ways too, but that's the major way.
Okay. All right. In case you missed it, Oregon has finally acknowledged that they had up to 800,000 voters that they're going to be removing from the rolls. We're going to talk about that next with Dr. Douglas Frank. And welcome back. We're talking today to Dr. Douglas Frank. He has been analyzing voter rolls across the nation since December 2020, including right here in Oregon. And he has uncovered compelling conclusions about our elections, along with some practical solutions to address the challenges we face. We'll get into that in a little bit. But real quick, 2 weeks ago, we spoke with Eric Lee, a senior attorney for Judicial Watch's election integrity team that is handling the lawsuit here in Oregon. And Oregon has suddenly decided to admit that, yes, they do have an awful lot of inactive registered voters who ought to be removed by law, according to the National Voting Rights Act. But there's more to it than that. But let's start there. Oregon claims these people never get ballots, and yet there are no end of stories of parents getting ballots for kids who moved away more than two elections ago. People move out of state and still get ballots. So will removing these 800,000 ineligible voters that shouldn't have been on there anyway, is that going to have any real impact? I mean, does it restore some level of election integrity, or is it all just for show?
I really like this question. If everyone was honest and our central governments were not incompetent, then I would think that a voter roll cleanup at the central level would be a very good idea and very efficient. But the way it actually works in your state is the clerks themselves don't do the cleanups. They think they do, but they don't. The majority of what's been happening is happening at a central level. So it's like your local clerk doesn't have a copy of her own voter rolls that she adds and removes people from. She logs into the state system to add voters and remove. And so there's a lot of other stuff that's going on besides what she's doing. And when the state says, oh, we're going to remove a bunch of people, she doesn't have a snapshot of what the rolls looked like a week ago to compare with. So she doesn't know which ones were removed. In the same way, she also doesn't know which ones were added. So it's not like she's maintaining her own local copy, if that makes sense. And so she doesn't really know. She's just taking their word for it. So I always tell people letting the state clean your voter rolls is sort of like, you know, letting your kid clean his own bedroom, you know, and we know how that works out. You walk in and you say, hey, I told you to clean your room. And he says, I did. You should have seen it beforehand. So you've got dirty rolls to begin with. The state says they're cleaning it. They've already admitted they're out of compliance with federal law. They've already admitted they've put tons of people on there that are not citizens, right? Because you have all these automatic registration ways.
Right.
And
voter.
So exactly. And so trusting them to do it right, I don't think is the right approach. Now, I'm a numbers guy, so I've been downloading the rolls on a regular basis for your state, sometimes on a monthly basis, and tracking it. And so they say they're removing people, but I've been tracking it. I haven't seen any net large drop in your voter rolls. And so then the question simply is, well, they say they removed people. Well, how many did you add back? If you removed 800,000 but added back 800,000, there's no net change. So that's where I come in with my numbers and my analysis. And I have copies of the voter rolls and I give them to local people. And then we have snapshots and I show them who's being added and removed. They're shocked when they see it.
Hmm. Well, I said that there's more to it than just those 800,000, because while that's a good start, Judicial Watch said those are just the inactives that are required by law to be removed. under the National Voter Rights Act. They're also going to be demanding the removal of active voters who are ineligible. So from your analysis and research, how many ineligible active voters are there on Oregon's rolls that should not be?
About a third of your rolls need to be taken off. They need to, they're people who shouldn't be in your rolls, and about a third. It's a big number.
And that's not the inactives that they're talking about. You're talking about people that are active voters that are apparently voting in at least one out of two federal elections. Those are the ones that you're saying need to be removed.
Active and inactive. If you add the active ones who should be removed and the inactive ones who should be removed, it's about a third of your voter rolls.
Hmm.
I've got the numbers, and I've run every single county in your state. The last 5 years, I have a copy of the voter rolls every year, and I've compared the snapshots year to year, and I can tell you who should have been removed, who wasn't removed. Actually, the state's been adding and removing a lot of people. We call it voter roll churn. We talked about it last time I was on with you. And there's actually a lot of adding and removing going on, but it's mostly adding and removing of active voters, not inactives. And so that's what Judicial Watch is complaining about. They're saying, hey, you were supposed to remove these people and you haven't been.
Yes. So you will be coming to Oregon here starting later this month, February.
February 20th to 27th. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then you've got, you're also be coming in March and April as well. And I would really encourage people to go to these presentations. These elections are not going to fix themselves. And so we need to start taking control here. So I am curious, though, have you ever had a county clerk show up to one of your presentations in these counties to challenge your assumptions and analysis? And I guess the other question is, if not, why not? You would think that they, if they've got truth on their side, why wouldn't they show up to defend what's going on?
So the answer to the first part of your question, yes. In fact, I just came from Wisconsin, where I met with six county clerks in one room and another 20 people. And when they challenged me at first, they said, there's no way, Dr. Frank, we are the ones who control our rolls. We're the ones who log in and change. So what do? I give them copies of their own voter rolls and their jaws fall open. So in other words, and I've done that in Oregon, by the way. I've given multiple of your sheriffs copies of your own voter rolls and their jaws fall open. They'll say, hey, Dr. Frank, you know, I know how many people are moving in and out of my county. I get a list every month of everybody's moved in and out. You know, it's a few percent, not 40%. And so when I give the list to the sheriffs, they confirm it as well. So that's the first half. Yes, I'm not afraid of clerks at all. Now, clerks that don't want to come, I understand that too, because a lot of times when we bring fraud to a county clerk, they panic because they think we're going to try to pin it on them, first of all. And then second of all, in their own words, they don't want to be Tina Petered because, you know, when we brought fraud to Tina Peters in Mesa County, Colorado, and then we made backups of her machines, the state really came after her. And so they made an example out of her to scare everybody else. To scare the other clerks. So, you know, oftentimes when I show fraud to a clerk, the blood drains from their face and they think, oh, no, you're coming after me. I say, no, you're the person we trust. We want you to run the election, not the state. So I do my best to win over my clerks. I don't see them as adversaries. I see them as there are local people we love and trust to run our elections, and we should be helping them.
Yeah.
You said it best a minute ago. It needs to be us getting involved and taking back local control of our elections.
Absolutely. So I will make sure that we put that up on today's show page, which is 16-06, ispyradio.com/1606, and you can sign up and register for those presentations. Dr. Frank, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Delighted to be with you.
He has a PhD from Harvard University in political science, has written nearly 30 books since 2004. Six of those landed on the New York Times bestseller list, two of which hit number one. And I'm talking, of course, about Dr. Jerome Corsi. Dr. Corsi, it is always great to talk to you, especially so when there's some really good news out there about election integrity.
There's some really good breaking news out there. And I do think we're going to get major changes, which will be proof of citizenship and a voter ID.
I
really think it's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. There's really so much big news out there. And I love it when the big news is good news for once. And I'm referring to Fulton County with the FBI raiding the elections and taking away some 700 boxes of evidence And so far, I have not seen any publicly released comprehensive inventory of what exactly was seized. But according to the search warrant obtained by various news outlets, the FBI was authorized to seize all physical ballots from the 2020 general election, tabulator tapes, electronic ballot images, and 2020 voter rolls. From your perspective as an election integrity expert, what do you think they'll find?
Well, they're going to find a lot of things. They're going to find that there were many ballots that were simply not authenticated or not even certified that were counted. They're going to find a lot of people that don't exist who were counted. They're going to find illegal immigrants who voted that were counted. They're going to find about everything you can think of that would be fraud. And Georgia, I actually went to Georgia about 3 months ago, was in the state legislature, brought in by some of the people in Georgia who've been fighting for voter integrity, and Ratzenberger and the others refused to see me. I mean, I've stopped by their offices and left my card and let them know I was there. I said I was basically just the front guy for the FBI, which would be soon there, and I encouraged them to talk to me, but they wouldn't. And so now we have what I've said would happen is the FBI has been there and has seized, I think, what is going to be obvious evidence of illegal voting activity on a massive scale.
Well, Trump says that we're going to be certainly seeing some interesting thing coming out of Georgia. Do you or Peter Tichtin, have you heard any hints of what exactly he was talking about when he said that?
Well, I think the bottom line is that there'll be criminal indictments coming out of this investigation. Hmm. This is not just, this is intentional malfeasance, intentional stealing of an election. It's an intentional illegal voting on a massive scale that the state of Georgia just thought they could get away with. They were completely in defiance of the rules, and they set their own rules, and their own rules were that they were going to produce enough ballots to give the 2020 election to Joe Biden, regardless of how many it took. And algorithms in their state database, which produced these hundreds of thousands of people who didn't exist and people who shouldn't be on the rolls.
Assuming for the moment that it's absolutely true that Fulton County in particular, but Georgia itself was stolen. The other aspect of that is finding the proof, the actual evidence that this person did this, this person did that. Where would you anticipate that the fraudsters are the most vulnerable, the evidence that would be most likely to trip them up so that they won't be able to dodge or easily explain it away?
Well, I think you'll find my guess would be that there'll be indictments both in Fulton County of various officials who knew the illegal voting activity was going on and allowed it to happen, maybe even encouraged it to happen. And then I think you might find some indictments at the state level where the officials in the Georgia election offices that, again, knew that the voters were, votes were being fabricated. The rules on mail-in ballots in particular were being rigged to allow the steal an election, and that in fact they did steal an election. I'm confident that Georgia would have gone for Trump had the vote been legitimate, and this is what I think Donald Trump is determined to prove. He said it over and over again that the evidence that he has, would fill truckloads of evidence. So right now, the American people are being prepared to understand that the 2020 election was a complete theft. It involved foreign nations like China interfering with the election. It involved the machines that were tabulating the results. And it was run by not only the Fulton County executives in the Board of Elections, but in the State Board of Elections. And this was a well-known and well-understood plan that was barely hidden from the public. And if you recall, in 2020, Georgia just kept counting until they had enough votes that Biden won.
Yeah. Well, the evidence of fraud is pretty overwhelming. I mean, this FBI raid is coming just a few weeks after Fulton County was finally forced to admit that 315,000 votes were counted illegally because they did not have the proper verification. And some of that is that
they didn't verify that the machines had been zeroed out, that they started at zero. I think that's pretty astonishing. I mean, you can have literally tens of thousands of votes preloaded into those machines. And so when you look at the figures in 2020, Fulton County, there were just under 809,000 registered voters. Of those, 315,000 fraudulent votes is 39% of all possible registered voters. But in 2020, there were only 318,000 and change votes cast in the presidential election. So that means 98.9% of Fulton counties were fraudulently counted. So if you threw out those votes, Trump only lost Georgia by 11,000. But if you exclude Fulton County's votes and count the rest of Georgia, Trump would have won by 231,000 votes. Well, so this is a massive fraud.
It's a massive fraud. And the key is also that the states knew where to produce the fraudulent votes. In other words, the states that stole the election in 2020, and this was the battleground states that continued the voting past the election day, they knew which counties to use for stealing. They knew which counties to run the algorithms. They knew which counties would cooperate, and it would be surface credible. In other words, if you take some states where there's rural counties, Ohio's a good example. You couldn't have the rural counties in Ohio all go for Biden in 2020 or, for Kamala Harris in 2024. It would have been obvious. So the fraud's going to go on. It's going to go in places like Fulton County, where there could credibly be Democratic surge. If this is a well-engineered, conscious plot that is determined in advance and implemented in advance with a conscious result to have the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, not win the election.
Yeah. Well, it is clear that it didn't just happen by accident, that's for sure.
No.
All right, everyone, stay with us. We're going to take a break here, come back, we'll continue this discussion with Dr. Jerome Corsi. Still lots more to unpack here in what is happening in Fulton County, Georgia. And we're back. We're talking today to Dr. Jerome Corsi. He's the author of about 30 books, including two New York Times bestsellers. He's also the founder and CEO of CorsiNation.com, and be sure to go to his election integrity website, Gods5Stones.com, and we'll link that up on today's show page, which is 16-06. And I should mention that we're talking to him from a very snowy North Carolina that is causing a little bit of problems with the phones, but we're just going to hang on and hope for the best. So we've been talking about Fulton County and the FBI raid there, and, we just had Maduro get arrested. Do you think those two are at all connected?
Well, they can be, because a lot of the cheating in the election, China, for instance, interfering in the election, occurred through Venezuela, which controlled a lot of the computers that were being used in the U.S. election in 2020. Now, why we had we allowed computers to go to foreign countries tabulating the 2020 presidential election is a mystery to me, unless we intended to use the computers to cheat. And in various states they did, and Georgia was one in which that was the case.
The other issue with the 2020 Georgia election is that it wasn't just the presidential election that they stole. Remember, in Georgia, they stole not one but two U.S. Senate seats. And that was incredibly important, because if they had not picked up those two seats, Republicans would have held the Senate. And the result of those thefts is that there was a 50-50 tie, and with Kamala's tie-breaking vote, the Democrats took control of the Senate, giving Democrats the House, the Senate, and the White House, and then they went on an absolute spending spree using COVID as the excuse to spend over $1 trillion, where fraud happened at pretty much every level: healthcare, housing, unemployment, paycheck protection, and economic injury disaster loans. Have you talked with Peter Tichtin about the ramifications of a stolen election? I mean, if it could be proven that 2020 was in fact stolen, does that negate any laws that were passed at the time, given at least those two fraudulent senators from Georgia, or for that matter, signed into law by a fraudulent president? Obviously, we can't overturn the election because we're already past that, but what are the ramifications legally?
Well, they're serious. I mean, we could question whether or not someone who won an election illegally, and that could be proved, deserves the seat. And therefore, are all their votes that they took until they were removed from office negated? Does that make an impact on either the state or the federal level in votes that were calculated and taken? Now, going back and sorting all that out is probably more than is going to be politically reasonable to happen. But evidence is coming out, this issue in the Fulton County Superior Court, when we now get the testimony of the candidate, U.S. Senator David Perdue, who was a key candidate in the 2020 election, is forced into a January 5th, 2021 runoff against the Democrat after winning November 3rd by election 2020 by 90,000 votes, but it was not enough to meet the 50% threshold necessary. Now, when Perdue in 2022 was before the grand jury, one of the interrogators was this disgraced prosecutor, Nathan Wade, the same man who later was exposed for his affair with the district attorney, Fannie Willis. Well, Wade pressed Perdue on the election night controversies, and he said that, hey, you're talking about the State Farm Arena and the things that happened in that video, I'm assuming, Wade said to Perdue. I said, since then, the Secretary of State's office made multiple investigations, have looked into that and found nothing illegal occurred.
Sure.
And Perdue, well, that's your opinion. I mean, obviously, Perdue knew that there was no investigation. And in fact, as Wade continued his testimony, it was clear that the investigations had occurred, but they were not to produce satisfaction. And he said, why? And it was because the head of the investigative unit, Wade, this guy, Vic Reynolds, called Perdue and said, we're not going to investigate. Governor wants me to tell you, Governor Kemp, we're going to say we are not going to investigate that because, you know, we want everybody to be a team player. And the governor doesn't want me to investigate. This is Vic Reynolds, who was the head of the investigative unit. He said, well, I'm not going to investigate. So the so-called investigation that Georgia did of Fulton County and the election results and all the ballots that showed up in the middle of the night, if you remember, 2020 yep. in Georgia.
Yep.
No investigation was ever conducted. They didn't want to conduct. They knew it was fraudulent. They didn't want to investigate themselves. And now we've got testimony from this grand jury, from Senator Perdue, and it makes it obviously clear that the extent of the cover-up in Georgia was massive. And send it all the way to the governor's office.
Well, and as far as cover-ups are concerned, that Vic Reynolds, who was supposed to be investigating but shut it down at Kemp's request, it sounds like, he was then rewarded for that, and he was put on the Supreme Court of Georgia, I think it was, or one of the courts. So there you go. You're a faithful servant, and you get that rewarding. Whether it's the stolen 2020 election or ongoing efforts to undermine elections, I think the best course of action is for anyone involved in election theft, for them personally, I think the best course of action is they need to confess and come clean. Do you think that's likely to happen given the extent of all of this?
I don't think there's going to be anybody admitting they stole elections. I think that what's going to happen is that we've already had a series of revelations by Tulsi Gabbard that have made it clear two things, that the Chinese interfered in the election and tried to change results. Number two, a number of states, I think numbers up to about seven, have refused to turn over their state voter rolls to the federal government for examination. So they're resisting investigation right now by Tulsi Gabbard, and she's making that clear. Now you've got the seizing of all the election data in Georgia by the FBI, and the FBI is proceeding to investigate criminal charges. So President Trump is doing, he's having the Justice Department, Department of Homeland Security, making it clear our elections are not secure. And so a national security emergency is being created around the algorithms, the ability to cheat in these elections, the ability to cheat massively and obviously, and then cover it up.
And they need to pick up the pace on that because the midterms are approaching rather quickly. You know,
That's right.
As far as hiding the evidence, it's a general rule in life. If they don't let you look, there's cheating happening. All right, let's go and take a break. We'll wrap things up with Dr. Corsi coming up after this. And welcome back. In our final segment now, talking today to Dr. Corsi. He's a best-selling author and an expert in many fields, including election integrity. He's the author of about 30 books and more articles than you can count. And so you can find out more about him by heading to CorsiNation.com and also Gods5Stones.com. Head to iSpyRadio.com/16-06. We'll make sure that we have those linked up in case you didn't catch those. So in the time that we have left, I said in my opener that when people are confronted with evidence of the 2020 fraud, and it's looking more and more overwhelming, that we're likely going to see an awful lot of cognitive dissonance happening, where people just are simply unable to believe it. Mentally, their psyche will make all sorts of excuses not to believe the new information. And I think we're obviously going to see this, especially from everyday Democrats, who've been told by all of the pundits on TV and on the left-wing shows, CNN and all the rest, that it's the big lie that it was stolen. Do you have any thoughts on how to overcome that disconnect? Or do you think the amount of evidence that we're going to be seeing will be so overwhelming that people will just naturally be convinced of it?
Well, I think the evidence will get convincing when people start being arrested and prosecuted. I also agree that there'll be some Democrats who will never be able to embrace the idea that there was cheating. They'll go back to the disclaimers and believe that the election was honest. But the evidence is going to be clear to anyone who thinks take a look at it. And I do believe, and I want to make it clear that, you know, a lot of the Rhino Republicans don't want the election laws changed either. So, you know, Thune and others in the Senate are not reliable to pass the SAVE Act, which I think has a chance of passing in order to put voter ID and proof of citizenship in place. But that won't be enough. I think the real strategy going on, and Peter Titkin and I have talked about this, is that President Trump's going to set the case before the American people, to any reasonable person, that the 2020 election was stolen. Now, that evidence is going to demand that we have a national security emergency. You have to understand our elections are not secure. That it will justify President Trump issuing an executive order under Article 3 as Commander-in-Chief, saying we're going to implement the following measures to make sure our elections are secure. The states are going to have proof of citizenship, voter ID, and no machines used. And that will demand that the states comply. And if the states don't comply, President Trump may be forced to have the federal government run the election in the blue states that are going to still try to cheat.
Well, that is a massive undertaking, what you're describing, and I think at that point we might really genuinely see open rebellion. So it's going to be really curious how all of that plays out. In the time that we have left, the reason I think Georgia and Fulton County are so important is because I think it's starting to open the door to how much fraud is out there. And there's some news out of Michigan. I think it was last week. A citizen investigator had posted video testimonies of Republican poll workers at a state legislative hearing, and they testified that they had been threatened when they attempted to challenge things like stacks of military ballots, which all had different names, but the birthdays were all the same, January 1st, 1900. And all of those ballots went for Biden. Also, the poll workers testified that the same batches of ballots were being scanned 9 or 10 times. They were being stopped from doing their jobs and were even locked out of some rooms. Another poll worker found evidence that Dominion tabulators were all connected to the internet. So do you think that Michigan is next, or do you see another state being the next one?
Well, there's also similar accusations going on in Wisconsin. There's the 8 or 10 states that refuse to turn over their voter rolls are all not doing so because they know they'll be caught for running an illegal election, which they knew they were doing. This was a conscious act to steal the election by radical Democrats who have lost the will of law. They want power is more important to them. Preventing Donald Trump from being president is their ultimate goal. And any means they have to take, including stealing elections, they believe are justified by the end of keeping Donald Trump from being president. So I expect, you know, the point that the Donald Trump cannot allow the 2026 midterm election to be conducted by the states with the existing rules, or the election will certainly be stolen.
Yeah.
And we will have a majority in Congress of Democrats who will impeach Trump and make the last 2 years of his presidency as much of a living hell as were the last 2 years of his 2016 win. Donald Trump knows this. And
well, we've only got about a minute here with you. Real quick, how do you see the impact of Georgia on people like Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell, who have had their lives destroyed?
Well, hopefully they'll have a chance for vindication. And hopefully the courts are even now, you know, we have had a Supreme Court case where Chief Justice Roberts has said that a candidate for office has standing to challenge state election rules before the election is held. So I think the courts are going to be open now to challenges from candidates in 2026. But the point is, I believe Donald Trump is on path with a strategy, with an executive order that will force the states to conduct elections in a fair way. If states don't do it, Donald Trump will be, I think, having to take over.
I think we're about to witness some really momentous history if that all happens. Dr. Corsi, I want to thank you so much for your time today. This has been awesome.
Well, my great pleasure. And I'm very encouraged by what I'm seeing for voter integrity. I think we finally are turning the corner.
I sure hope so. It is up to us to fix our elections. People who get elected fraudulently will never fix them. The good news is that generally speaking, margins that are too big help prevent fraud because it makes the fraud too obvious, assuming anyone is allowed to look. But as we saw in 2020, if the prize is big enough, they will make the cheat big enough. All of that multi-trillion dollar spending was a pretty tempting big prize if Democrats could just seize control of the House and Senate and White House, which they did. You know, it would be a good idea if you attended Dr. Frank's presentations when he's here in Oregon. You can find out when those are and where those are by heading to ispyradio.com/16-06. We will have links to his schedule down in the show notes. And bring a friend, preferably a skeptical one, who just might be open-minded enough to listen. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.